Hello, everybody. This is Patrick Sullivan, your host of the PLM Quick 30 presented by Archer Gray. And I'm super excited about our guest today. She is somebody that I ran into years ago who actually specialized in leading an implementation of MBD for a new program. And since we're exploring definitions of digital thread and digital transformation, I thought she would be a great guest to have on the podcast to help share her experiences. And hopefully you guys will get some, you know, some good advice and lessons learned and best practices and leading practices as you listen to all of her great experience. So today our guest is Heather Pomeroy. She is currently employed at Northrop Grumman. Heather, was it, did they acquire Orbital? Is that how it happened? Or was it a merger?
Yes. It actually, I started at Orbital, then we merged with Orbital with ATK, which became Orbital ATK, and then Northrop bought Orbital ATK.
Okay, great. So now that I kind of walked in just a brief introduction, would you mind taking a few minutes to introduce yourself and give everybody kind of the history of who you are and how you bring us to present, essentially?
All right. Well, hello, everyone. Patrick said, I'm Heather Pomeroy. Starting from the beginning, I guess, when I originally went to school, I never really had engineering in mind. When I went, I went to Old Dominion University, for those of you who know, that's down in Norfolk, Virginia, and originally went for nuclear medicine and physical therapy, of all things. And then ended up pivoting to mechanical engineering and motorsports. I remember my advisor saying I was crazy because it's normally the other way around.
Was there an impetus? What was the big turning point? Where were you inspired?
You know, my college roommate will tell you that it was her, all her doing. she was in mechanical engineering as well. And we just had like a long all night conversation about, you know, what you can do with engineering and how many doors it can open. And so pretty much the next day I went to my counselor and changed my major.
All right.
The rest is history, yeah.
Did she stay in engineering, by the way?
She did, yeah. She's down in San Diego now, working out of the Naval Yard down there, yeah.
Oh, great. Okay.
So my goal actually out of college was to stay in the automotive industry. And that obviously didn't happen because now I'm in the defense industry. So I pivoted yet again, started up with Orbital Sciences near DC, pretty much stayed in the same office for 12 years, but changed businesses, companies three times. And I just actually recently transferred out to California location for Northridge. So that's where I am now.
Okay, so what's your role currently?
So role currently doing some engineering, typical engineering type role, but I'm also doing some wind chill implementation for us here, starting with doing some, basic Creo skills and model intent and integrity and stuff like that for the folks here, trying to get a kind of a baseline to get them into an MBD environment in the future. So starting all over again, I guess.
Yeah, I was just going to say, starting from scratch. Well, they lucked out. They've got somebody that has gone through a new implementation and brought people up to, new standards and a new way of creating product, which is excellent. I think they lucked out. So let's dive into that a little bit. You had mentioned that you're helping them with a wind chill implementation and then looking to implement MBD. I assume once things start to get a bit more stable and the users have adopted wind chill. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's not just adopting wind chill. I mean, there's a lot that goes into the whole MBD process. There's, like I said, design intent is huge. You want to make sure you have your model integrity is there. Because, you're removing the onus of the drawing. So a lot of times people would just, fake stuff on a drawing or overwrite dimensions or things like that just to get what they what they need, hash things into a model, not really modeling it properly. So you kind of have to tear away those layers, start from the beginning. And that's kind of what I'm doing now, just trying to build up a kind of like a basic set of skills that will then form into an MBD environment at some point in the future.
That's interesting, because I'd be curious to know, you know, you talk about the skills. So are you building upon, because that's one of the things I was actually curious about, because if I remember correctly, a new program was beginning and you were able to assemble a team that was eager to implement MBD standards and design to those types of standards, right? And so you were able to start fresh, but now you're talking about building the skill set up. Did you have to do the same thing on the previous program?
Nope. So where I was before, we had already kind of developed our standards ahead of time. So going to MBD was an easy, not easy, you know, push the button, that was easy kind of thing, but it was more seamless. But for this new location, we just kind of have to go back a couple steps in that timeline just to kind of make sure everyone's on the same page. Because I am coming in new too, I want to make sure that everyone's skill sets are, you know, we kind of even them out a little bit.
Okay, well, you know, I kind of jumped right into it. So let's back up just a little bit. And well, I have to be selfish because I'm interested what's happening in the industry, especially the last few years. People talk about digital transformation and digital thread. And I think it happened about a year ago. Somebody in a meeting, a client actually said, "Hey, can somebody please explain to me what digital transformation is? Because I hear about five different perspectives on that term." So I'm interested to hear, what does it mean to you?
I'd say for me, it's the effect of digitizing our content, I think is the first step. And then the digitalization of the actual environment. So like the PLM or like model-based environment kind of thing. So those two together, I would say is more, it, you know, put those two things in the bucket, becomes digital transformation. Definitely moving away from the paper, you know, that's a given. For those of you who saw my PTC LiveWorks presentation, I did two in a row, getting rid of the paper junk in the trunk was all about MBD. It was a couple of years ago. Definitely, you know, trying to move towards a more collaborative environment, not trying to work in a vacuum, which is, you know, really hard to get out of that habit, you know. So not just collaborative amongst the engineers, but because you now have these downstream users who are going to be dependent on your model, you know, getting in contact with them ahead of time before you're making your deliverables, making sure you're, you know, covering your bases there and things like that. But like I said, you know, it is hard, you know, because the emphasis is, once you make that transformation, the emphasis is on model integrity, you know, and just getting into the philosophy of how you model things and not just why you have to do it this way, but, you know, that's really important too.
Well, so that's a good segue. So can you explain to the audience what MBD is, for those listening that may not know what it is?
I mean, literally, model-based definition, model-based design. We make your model, your CAD model, as it's going to be manufactured. You have your full model intent in there, and everything is assembled and or created as if it were going to be manufactured. So you want to keep your relationships together, you know, this part needs to always stay with this part and link together that way, things like that. So that's the first step. Then you go into then adding in your annotation planes and yada, yada, yada. Then you do your deliverable. But so your deliverable, for us, it was the Creo viewable that was published once we checked it into Windchill. So we were actually physically releasing the native CAD model and the deliverable. And we weren't doing 3D PDFs, which I know a lot of people in the industry do. So we eliminated an entire line item out of our release cycle.
You were talking about the native PDF and the deliverable being released at the same time. And one of the things that you did different was that, you know, a lot of people in the industry that are using 3D, but you did not, if I heard you correctly.
yeah, like I said, I mean, a lot of people will still have a 3D PDF where, you know, my philosophy is, well, you know, you're still managing another piece of information. Yes, it is 3D. And yes, it, you know, you do have your MBD in that 3D PDF, you know, and anyone can access it. It's a lot easier. But if you can get your suppliers on board, your end users on board, you know, to use a lightweight viewer like Creo View, you can release and manage your native CAD, do your deliverable, and that way you don't even have to manage a secondary, you know, engineering document. So it enables the end user to take control of the model and interrogate it on their own, you know, which then, you know, decreases the, you know, go backs you get a lot with, you know, downstream users and the engineering team. You know, what is this dimension? You know, this isn't matching up correctly, and so on and so forth. Whereas now they can, you've kind of put the power in their hands to interrogate it on their own. And it's not fully dimensioned most of the time. So they can interrogate those dimensions that they need.
Were you able to accomplish that at Orbital?
Yes.
So using a native file, and forgive me if I say something off, so please correct me, because I'm hoping that people are listening that have the lack of knowledge that I do. Okay. So we're looking to help educate them. So if the native file, 3D file, is being leveraged, which I hear not needing to manage a secondary file is certainly a benefit. So is it standard that manufacturing folks go into a CAD file and can interpret it and work through it?
Yep. So we actually train them on Creo View. We equip them on the floor with, you know, big screen TVs and things like that. We basically set up our Creo View viewables. The way I would say it was like a book. You know, I want to start with an index or a table of contents, and I kind of want to step through that story. And I want my model to tell that story, weave that, you know, that thread through this piece of digital information. And therein also lies the how important it is for communication up front, because, you know, the guys on the manufacturing floor might not, you know, need to see, because now they now have the model, they may not need to see certain things annotated in the model anymore because it's there for them. So communication is really important. But we trained them on Creo View. They loved it. It really increased efficiency for them down there. So in my book, that's a win.
So I'm curious. So, you know, we have clients where we're helping them centralize their bill of material and create more efficiency in that whole process. And so here we're talking about in a drawing-centric environment where you would have an engineering BOM, right? And it's passed over to the manufacturing folks. And for one reason or another, the engineering BOM doesn't have annotations enough to describe. So there's some retrofitting, or, you know, how it's designed doesn't necessarily mean how it's built. So now you have a manufacturing BOM, which oftentimes is different from the engineering BOM. And often, well, for these particular clients where it's linear in fashion, where the goal is to get the product out the door, so engineering BOM, MBOM, and then out the door, right? And in some cases, as built, as delivered, and then you have a service BOM thereafter. So in that process that I just described of it being linear, you're talking about having communication up front, and is there iteration that's going on where, as you know, when it's on the floor actually being built, are they going back to the engineers? Like, who's responsible for ultimately updating? Who owns the native file?
Yeah, absolutely. That's engineering. We actually managed our engineering BOMs, and our product structure and our MBOMs were pretty much in line with each other. That was another effort we endeavored at roughly around the same time. So that was a beast in and of itself, but topic for another day.
Yeah, that what was? I'm sorry.
No, the product structure and the M-bombs and the E-bombs and everything all pretty much co-aligning with each other. It was just another effort that we endeavored upon. So I would say like 90% of our bombs were matching. We tried to get everything to align with each other as best they could. So,
yeah, that's great. So did you just have one bomb, or was there still an E-bomb and an M-bomb, even though you had implemented MBD and you're dealing with the native file? Were there different bill of materials, or is it a one bomb?
It's one bomb, but our product structure, because the manufacturing folks could query the model, again, therein lies, you know, the model integrity, you know, which flows up to your assembly level. You know, we had to make sure that our assemblies were correct, naming everything was correct, we had the right parts in there, and so on, because when they clicked on something, it needed to match and align with what they were looking at on the bomb.
Got it. So how did you validate all that? Is that with upfront communication? Because even if you're planning and communicating upfront, right, you still, I imagine that there's still some iterative process associated to that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's design checks and, you know, our design leads, you know, check everything, verify everything. We'll have a checker verify everything, and then it goes to through another check, you know, so there's many gates. But it's important to check it all as a package, as one unit, you know, not just, whereas people would normally just check a drawing, you know, without a bomb or without the model, you know, you need everything together that tells that story.
Yeah, right. All right. So I'm curious, you know, how did you get selected to head up that effort? Like, what kinds of things transpired for you to be in position to lead the implementation MBD on that program?
So, I would say, you know, it was right about the time that we started to implement PLM as a whole. You know, we were already doing PDM in Windchill, but we were starting to transition into PLM. So, you know, it kind of seemed like the perfect time. And I was about to lead this new program. So, yeah, it just, you know, the stars aligned. We said it was time. We wanted, you know, single source of truth. To be quite honest, I you know, I'm always up for a challenge. So why not?
Yeah, that's great.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of folks could use that bravery, especially when you're trying to change CAD practices and CAD standards within an organization that has seen decades of success prior to. Looking back at that scenario, I'm curious, you know, when you think about what you wanted to set out to achieve, and did you accomplish what you set out to achieve? So we're talking about this opportunity and facing a challenge. What were your original goals, and do you feel like you achieved those?
I mean, yeah, original goal really was obviously to implement the MBD, but also a big thing that we wanted to maintain was reusability. So we may have several different dash numbers of the same base number, or we may have a couple of different variants that might be slightly different, but a different part number. So the annotations would pretty much all be the same. Whereas before we would put all that on a drawing and we'd say, you know, same as -01, except we're noted or something like that, you know. So reusability was a huge factor in implementing MBD. And I came up with a process that allowed us to do that. And, you know, to this day, I'm still getting feedback saying that it, you know, has saved a lot of time for the design engineers. Because they don't have to keep redoing all of this information, and they can just take what they've already done and apply it to the next product. And if they need to make a change, they can make the change once regenerated across the board, and they've got that that implemented. So, you know, I wouldn't say that I wouldn't. I can't say that there would be anything that I would change in the way that I implemented it. In fact, you know, going into this new endeavor, my plan is, you know, if I can get everyone on board with it, to pretty much try to implement it in a similar fashion, because it was successful in that regard. So,
will you be starting the same way that you did prior to? Because it was a new program, right? And this, in this scenario, it sounds like you're trying to change away. Will you be doing it on a new product, or will it be a new program also?
Most likely not. Just the way things are there, we probably have to implement it, you know, mid-program or something, if it comes to that. So,
you said probably implement it as a new program?
As a, like, mid-program.
Oh, mid-program. Okay. How do you feel about that challenge? You said you're up for a challenge. The one thing that I consistently hear about it is changing a culture, and especially engineers that have had a lot of success, you know, throughout the years, trying to change those culture habits.
Culture change starts at the bottom. You know, you have to, you know, like I was saying, you have to start at the base of that ladder. You know, change tiny thing by tiny thing, and slowly build that up. So when going to MBD is an option, it's a seamless decision, because that skill set has already been developed, fine-tuned. The models are in a good place, and it's a natural step.
You know, going back to that other, you said you wouldn't have changed much, but do you have lessons learned that you can kind of share when reflecting back?
Lessons learned. Let's see. Definitely trying to start more with, like, doing model-centric drawings first. We did not do that. That might be just the one thing. We kind of, for some of our suppliers, we ended up doing, like, minimally dimensioned drawings with a step file. So definitely starting with the model-centric stuff first, model-centric drawings, making sure your models are up to snuff.
How do you know that they're up to snuff? Like, when will you know that you've attained it?
I mean, that's a personal thing. you know, making sure everyone's using, you know, the same start parts, something, you know, basic stuff like that.
I mean, would a scenario be where you've run it through the entire process and you're getting feedback from everybody who touches the model along the way, and then you know that it's like the embalmed, because you were able to say that you were at least 90% aligned with embalm and EBOM, even though it was, you know, considered a single bomb, you had to navigate through product structure.
Yeah, I mean, but doing a model-centric drawing, I would say that, you know, having that be your first step is more of the focus is on the model itself and modeling practices as a whole. So, you know, making sure there aren't any buried features or suppressed or frozen things in your model, that kind of stuff.
I see. Okay.
That therein lies, you know, starting at the bottom, building up that skill set, making sure all of your models, as you go along, get up to that level of being able to be delivered as a model-centric drawing with, you know, neutral CAD format. And then once you've kind of gone through those iterations and there haven't been any major hiccups, then progress on to the next level, which then, you know, you start annotating your models, investigate, you know, maybe starting to remove the 3D PDF, you know, if that's in your wheelhouse, you don't do a 3D PDF, maybe you do the 3D deliverable like we did, the native document. So yeah, it really just starts with having robust models.
Got it. Thank you for touching on those lessons learned. So, you know, we had touched on it. I'm sorry for bouncing around a little bit, but, you know, we had talked about changing the standards and CAD practices and the people, and you mentioning that, you know, that it's building blocks. You got to start at the ground level, and that lessons learned of making sure that you are, you know, building clean models, right? You're starting with model centric and then evolving from there so that you have a seamless entry into, you know, starting to design product following MBD standards that are good and starting with a good model. So do you get a lot of resistance from folks when you've talked about the process and the standard of doing it, or do you have a lot of people that are intrigued? Like, what's the general, 'cause I know that you've spoken at conferences and tech committee meetings. And aside from just within your own organization, how do you feel the trend of the topic is catching on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely, people are intrigued by it. I really think that that's the way the needle is going. I mean, obviously with, you know, IoT and things like that, you know, in the market right now, you pretty much have to go to MBD if you want to stay current. But when we implemented it, I would say it really wasn't that difficult to sell. You know, once you let people know that, you know, hey, let's look at this drawing. It took you 4 different views just to define this one feature. Now, if I want to define this in the context of MBD, I can just do this in one combination state. And I don't need to set out 4 different views, however many different, you know, sheets that are needed to do that. So once people actually saw it in action and how much easier it would make their lives in the long run, it really just kind of sold itself.
So how long is that transition? You say, you know, there's intrigue once they see kind of the benefits, and it sounds like maybe an aha moment, but in order to embrace it and live in that world, how long does it take to realize the value?
I mean, I would say, you know, everyone's different in that regard. I would say more of the young people just hop on board right away, you know, because they want the newest, best thing all the time. So let's do it. It's fun. Some of the folks who've been in the industry for longer, we might start with just introducing combination states as a concept. Having them just start to use combination states in the context of their models without annotations and showing them that, you know, you can manage all these different view combinations, like, you know, reps and visibility and things like that, without having to manually go into your view manager and change everything every time you want to look at something different. And it's right there at the bottom of your screen, and you can toggle between it. Makes like, you know, so just starting there with some of those people that are the hard adopters. I can't quantify a timeline for that, you know, because like I said, everyone is different in that regard, but therein lies, you know, you really need to be respectful of how people learn. You know, everyone learns something differently. You know, one global, you know, training method might not really apply to everyone. So for those people that have difficulty, you know, you need to kind of peel back that onion and see where you actually need to start and build up that skill set, or show them what they need to see to get them on board.
That's an insightful comment that, you know, a global trick, everybody learns differently, which, you know, people can identify with, but global having one specific method may not work, especially for something so intricate. And everybody learning at different levels. So taking a few steps back and thinking about MBD, and, you know, it's a big decision for an organization to go down that path. So what, and you can, I think you can infer some of the benefits from all the things that you've discussed so far, but just talking about that topic, what are some major compelling justification and or pain points that that implementing MBD helps address?
You know, you're going to, when you first implement it, you know, you're going to see, I would say, increased time and increased cost just in that learning curve. So, you know, I think everyone needs to be aware of that. But then after everyone has been trained and everyone, you know, it's smooth sailing from then on, you know, you've got gains in efficiency, you know, reduced time to market. Your model quality has improved, your end product has improved, and just enabling the end user and improved communication. You know, I definitely think the benefits are well worth the effort.
It sounds like you're sold on it.
Of course I'm sold.
Well, you know, I was curious, you know, to have this conversation coming from the new program to, you know, having cultural changes. But, you know, it's apparent that you had a great experience and you see the light at the end of the tunnel and just feel like it is the way to design product moving forward. So what advice would you have for folks out there that are looking to implement MBD with their organization?
So definitely patience. Don't bite off more than you can chew. You know, I know it's all, you know, it's the shiny new bauble, but not to just jump right at it. You know, like I said earlier, you know, take those baby steps. You know, the digital transformation that you want to take is not an overnight endeavor. You have to, you know, try to accumulate critical experience, you know, with situations and factors as you go along that helps build up that skill set. And if you go along that route and you build it up slowly, hopefully, you know, ROI should be realized a little bit earlier than planned, you know, if all goes well. You know, the MBD maturity level implementation ladder, I'm not sure if that has made its rounds. I know PTC has one. But just slowly implementing, you know, just climb that ladder, level one, level two, level three, and so on. And just focus on, like, those things that are outlined on that rung of that ladder. So, you know, start with model-centric drawings. Boom, done. Okay, you know, we went through a couple months. We've released, you know, 100 drawings, model centric. We're ready for the next level. Let's do it and just slowly make that transition. So, hopefully that helps.
Yeah. So, how would you suggest somebody start to get educated a bit more?
YouTube.
Yeah. What steps did you take? I mean, it sounds like you're certainly experienced in various standards. So were you attending conferences? Were you leveraging vendors to help understand it a little bit, get your arms around it to actually formulate a process that you know, or at least would have confidence that would work? Because it sounds like you, by the time you were ready to implement it, you had done all of that.
Yeah, there was a lot of legwork that I had done before we implemented it. There was a lot of testing that needed to be done as far as visualizations go and publishing and things like that. Because I know, you know, WYSIWYG is a huge issue with Creo and the Windchill deliverable, which I believe is fixed in the new build. But so back then, that, you know, luckily, I had a PTC contact that I worked with throughout my testing phase that, you know, we kind of developed some recipe files and things like that got us what we needed as an organization for our deliverables. But definitely doing research with what's out there on, you know, on YouTube, on the PTC, you know, community sites, there's a lot there. You know, I've got my old MBD presentations from the LiveWorks that I know are out there on the interweb somewhere. But yeah, there's a plethora of information. Definitely, first and foremost, I would say use that PTC community site, or if you have a, you know, advisor contact or somebody at PTC to get you down that right path.
Yeah, that's great. And if I don't know if you're open to this, but if people want to reach out to you directly or have questions, are you open to that?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Through LinkedIn. I think people can email me through LinkedIn would be the easiest.
Okay.
Just search my name on LinkedIn and shoot me a message.
That's great. Well, listen, Heather, thanks so much for taking the time. I know you're busy and I was really looking forward to this conversation and I definitely learned a lot. And I know everybody listening will gain a lot of good, valuable tips as well. Do you have any parting words?
Good luck.
We all need that. Good luck to you as well in your role and having another successful transformation and implementation of MBD. Thanks so much for talking about this topic. I appreciate it, Heather.
Oh, thanks, Patrick.